I remember my first millennial. It was the day after Zappos announced it was going to move its headquarters from Henderson into downtown City Hall. I had learned of the story beforehand, and in journalism vernacular, I had the scoop. So I did what you do. I called Zappos and asked them for a comment. I was put on hold. Then I was told it'd be a few hours before someone could get back to me. In the meantime, however, Zappos scrambled to tell its employees the news. They hadn't been ready to announce just yet, and they didn't want their employees to hear it for the first time from a newspaper. The problem is, when they did that, other media outlets found out. I might have been the first reporting it, but only by seconds. And if memory serves, they even put out a press release for all the other media outlets. They ruined my scoop, and I wasn't happy. So I asked to see the boss, this Tony Hasaya, the next day. Sure, they said, we'll let you see Tony. So I showed up, and I waited in a nondescript room. Maybe it was the Beatles room out in their Zappos headquarters. And some employees kept walking through the room like it was a shortcut, like it wasn't some formal room. And others could see right through the big windows, looking in on me as I was sitting there tapping my pencil and waiting for this Mr. Hosea to come in. So in walks this kid with a blue T-shirt, jeans, and sneakers. And I asked him, is Mr. Hosea coming? That's me, he said, not correcting my pronunciation of his last name, which is Shea. I looked him up and down. He looked like a college dropout that Zappos had talked into working the service phones. Give me a break. I'm not into playing games, I said. I want to talk to the boss. He almost imperceptibly shrugged. That's me, he said. And that was my introduction to the millennials. Though technically, Shay, who will turn 40 in less than a month, is a Gen Xer. But who is the millennial? Why was he dressed this way? Why don't executives who are millennials dress in ties and wear suits like we're all used to? Shay is a near billionaire, as far as I can tell, and he could buy and sell our city officials 100 times over, yet he's very apolitical. He once told me he didn't even know the meaning of right or left in reference to liberal or conservative political ideologies. So what do? Do they cook their own food? What are their mating rituals? Do they believe in a god? Do they think we have souls? Or do they think our personalities are the result of invisible quantum interactions or the zodiac? Well, I'm Joe Shaneman, and this is the Joe Downtown Show, coming to you from KUNV-FM 91.5. If you hear the tinkling of silverware, muffled laughter in the background, that's because we're broadcasting in the Beat Coffee House downtown at 6th and Fremont Streets. And for this week's show, we have the bookend to last week's show. We have Matt Heller, someone who knows a little bit about millennials. So much so that Heller is writing a book which he is calling Millennials 101. Heller's background, he moved to Las Vegas early this year and lives in what I call Millennial One, the high-rise condo complex, the Ogden, which is adjacent to this coffee shop. He earned his millennial bona fides identifying generational trends for companies such as Abercrombie & Fitch, Ketel One Vodka, the Museum of Contemporary Art Los Angeles, Adidas, and New Line Cinema. As I wrote in March, he believes most people have no inkling about what's going on in downtown Las Vegas. But at the time, he said, and I quote, "This is going to be the 21st century watering hole for the millennial generation." With that, I introduce you to Matt Heller. Welcome, Matt.
Thanks, Joe. Glad to be here.
So you and I have talked many, many times about what's going on downtown. Millennials, you find it a fascinating subject. I find it a fascinating subject. But in a sort of general terms, what is so interesting about this group of people, generally between 20 and, I'll say, 35? What? How do you see them? What about their religions, their practices, that, you know, everything we've sort of talked about over the months?
Well, they are a different group, and every generation's a little bit different. And I'm part of Generation X. I'm a late Gen Xer who grew up on the East Coast and then lived in Los Angeles for 15 years and worked in film and television and fashion and media and technology and all those things. And so I was forever focused on that youth culture because it drives all pop culture. And so whenever you're looking at popular culture and emerging trends, you're going to look at the youth of today or of the moment. And for me, that's the millennial generation. And generations are defined really by two things. First, their birth years. So while there's no written in stone definition, because it does depend on who you speak to, generations are typically about 20 years in length. And for millennials, they're born between 1980 and 2000, which puts them today somewhere in high school, college, or their 20s. Now, we actually do have some millennials cresting into their 30s, and we have some that have.
Is that the formal term, cresting?
It's the one I'd like to make formal for you today.
Very good, very good. Yeah. Okay, keep going.
This week on this week's show with Downtown Joe, we crest. But we've got millennials in high school, college, or their 20s. And so for me, so much of the fascination is that this is the generation who are the youth culture today. So it's not that I find millennials so interesting. It's just that they're the youth generation. The one that follows it will be just as interesting in, say, 10 or 20 years when they start coming of age. And that's really the important thing to recognize, is that you're asking questions about millennial behavior. They're just starting to do that behavior themselves. They're just starting to come of age. So as we look at millennials that are the oldest millennials in their early 30s are trying to do the sort of mating and breeding and nesting sort of rites of passage. And as they do, the more we know about them, the better we can predict what they're going to do when they hit one of those rites of passage. The next generation will be a little bit different. The one before, Gen X, was a little bit different. So for me, they're the group that's going to be defining our popular culture for the next 10 or 20 years, which is why I'm focusing on them. And the more we know about them, the better we can predict their behavior. The better we can predict their behavior, the more efficient we can be at engaging them as consumers or as an audience. And that's really what I do for a living. I try to sell them things.
So out there in the business world, are businesses clamoring to understand this generation?
They are, and in two sides. First, there are brands, your Coca-Colas or your Ford Motor Companies or your American Airlines, that are just struggling to figure out how they're going to remain relevant as this new group of consumers comes into the marketplace and takes it over. We're talking about a group of people who, born between 1980 and 2000, in their teens, 20s, and 30s, are going to represent 80 million consumers and already represent some people say billions of dollars in disposable income in these categories. And so for these companies, they have to understand how to engage them as consumers. But there's a whole nother side of the marketplace in the business world that's freaking out over millennials. And those are the companies that have realized they need to employ them. And as millennials are different as consumers, they're also very different as employees. And so much of why people in earlier generations, boomers and Xers, find them so fascinating is because they're forced to work with them. And that's going to become more and more of an issue. I mean, we're looking at, by the year 2025, nearly 75% of the active workforce will be the millennial generation. As boomers retire, they want an easy retirement. It's just human nature, and it's getting harder and harder for them to envision that.
Won't they just be like everybody else? Once, you know, this is like the halcyon period, and they're just trying on new outfits and new hairstyles, and then once they become 35 and have kids, they want the white picket fence and go to church and make sure their kids aren't drug addicts.
Yeah, I just got a new dog, and so everyone's telling me that she's in the puppy phase, and that when she becomes a little bit of an older dog, they all settle down and they all just sort of do what all older dogs do. Not true. It does depend on the breed. And so, and it also depends on what goes on with that dog. If you have them spayed or neutered, if your dog is isolated or always around other dogs. So here's what we know about millennials. Yes, they're going to age into life stages like parenthood and behave like normal parents, but they're going to approach parenting very differently than their parents did because they were impacted. Their parents, baby boomers, were very specific parents. They were known as helicopter parents. The result of which is now this millennial generation who was always hovered over, right? That's the helicopter of the helicopter parenting. And those helicopter parents, the baby boomers, told their kids how perfect they were and always made sure they were given trophies for everything and nothing was ever their fault. Well, this is a generation that has come of age, these now 20-somethings and the kids that are in college, and they're finding that they can't really cope with a lot of the reality.
They sound like somebody I would hate to work with.
You might.
And if there's somebody who's not ever going to admit fault, that means they're going to be very good at office politics.
Or terrible at office politics because they never had to really politic. See, I grew up having to negotiate with my parents because they assumed I did screw up if the teacher told them, if a bad report came home, it wasn't the teacher's fault. It was my fault. These kids, if a bad report came home, the parents assumed that it was the fault of the teacher. So the kid never actually had to explain what they had done right or done wrong. The parent immediately jumped in. So what that does is it puts an employee in the marketplace or in a company who, when they're given any kind of criticism, isn't really equipped to make any improvements because they don't assume that they did anything wrong in the first place. So why don't you want to work with millennials? There's a sense of entitlement there that a lot of Xers and boomers are finding is insurmountable when dealing with millennials.
Well, that you're not painting a very pretty picture of these people. I mean, everybody can change, obviously.
Well, I have to sell a book. So for me...
but you're telling it like you see it.
Boomers and Xers. Here's the fact. Boomers and Xers are freaking out as they find themselves in the workplace with millennials. They don't know how to cope. For the same reason, going back to me getting a new dog, I need a dog trainer. I don't understand what's going on in the head of this dog. And so I've hired Kathy Brooks, who's opening a hydrant club, to help me understand how to communicate with my dog. Great for Kathy Brooks. She's made her living becoming an expert on how dogs really operate. Well, as boomers and Xers are trying to figure out these strange millennials, I'm in the marketplace to help them do that. So, yeah, I'm seeing them freak out, and I'm positioning myself to help them understand them as employees or as consumers.
That's really interesting. I mentioned last week we had Daniela Capitano and Chrissy Danger on here, and I sort of facetiously talked about how I see these millennials downtown and these sort of wide-eyed looks, and they're all searching for something either in the corporate culture or other things. Do you see that? What's the search about? How do you encapsulate?
It's absolutely happening. I mean, but that's not unique to millennials. The idea of trying to figure yourself out is a classic, you know, every generation has gone through that. That's a person trying to figure themselves out. It's going to happen in their 20s one way or another, unless it's something, you know, speeds that up. So for what we call the greatest generation, when, you know, a generation of men were sent off to war at 17, 18 years old, they figured themselves out really fast. And they came home, and that struggle that Gen X or the baby boomers went through, and certainly millennials are going through to figure themselves out, that all happened in the trenches in Europe and in Asia. So by the time these guys came back, they were already at that stage where they were doing the, you know, the mating and breeding and nesting. Millennials will get there, but they're going through that phase where they're trying to figure themselves out. And I really think the only way you do that is through some sort of adversity. And so many of these millennials, though they were in an adverse environment, having grown up in, you know, two wars, post 9/11, surrounded by a lot of trauma, they themselves didn't really face a lot of that trauma because they were coddled by their helicopter parents. So they're on a journey. They're pioneering into a new place. And what's happening is they're figuring themselves out. And DTLV is one of the places where that's happening.
Now, is this... I sort of played devil's advocate last week with the two women on here. You know, lightly making fun of this all-for-one and one-for-all mentality. You see, you know, everybody wants to save the environment. I'm all for this. I mean, by the way, just I was playing the devil's advocate. Save the environment, do what's good for the community, help each other out. But, you know, one of them stated essentially they don't think it's real. What is it? Do they believe it? Do they not believe it? Are they going to keep doing this? I think it's actually a sort of a great thing, a great ethos to follow if you can follow through, if it's real. But I wonder if it is. I mean, what have you learned?
They're looking for a purpose. So if there's one that they can use to rally with each other, and certainly environmental causes are an easy one, right? I mean, there's not going to be a lot of people other than those who play devil's advocate resisting them. And so it gives them a chance to group together, which ultimately that there is a inherent tribal nature to this generation. And if they can find a common cause, it's that much easier to rally them. And we see corporations like Zappos do that with their corporate culture, consistently finding ways to give their troops something to rally around. So it doesn't surprise me that the environment is a cause that is attracting millennials.
But do you think they'd still do it at the expense of their own livelihoods? Would they do it? Would, you know, would they put our return on community over return on investment?
Yeah, I think today they would, because the stakes aren't that high. When you ask a 27-year-old what's most important to them, they're not going to. They're not even worried about their own health insurance, because they just left their parents' health insurance, and they're dealing with the immortality sort of complex. At least I'm speaking about millennial males. So many of them today, and it's a problem with this Affordable Care Act, are not opting into health care or health insurance because they don't think they really need it. They didn't use it that much yet. And so for them, that couple hundred bucks or $100 or less for catastrophic health insurance, they see a better use for that. And that better use is whatever they want to be doing in their lives. They just don't see the consequences.
That's not that unusual. When I was in my 20s, I thought the same thing. I didn't have health insurance because, you know, I'd break an arm and it'd heal a week later. It's just the way you are.
And I think that that's a good point, right? I mean, youth culture is youth culture. This generation's not really that different when it comes to how a 27-year-old thinks. The difference is if you put them in an environment and actually catalyze some of that thinking and put a name to it, we'll call it ROC, return on community, they'll rally more purposefully around it. Left to their own devices, they'll do whatever they want to do for what they find interesting, like avoid paying for health insurance because they don't think they need it, and spend it on, you know, taking a girl out or a guy out on a date.
You're making it sound, making them sound like a group that could be easily led. You would put a big false, you know, hologram of Jesus in the air or whatever, or their iPhone on their iPhone, and everybody's going to be led very easily, question very little, or am I wrong?
That's a much longer, that'll take a much longer answer, but they are certainly looking for purpose. I can tell you that, and meaning, and to belong to something. So they are absolutely at the stage in their lives when they're looking to belong to something and be part of a big group with a purpose. So yeah, you'd think that they're more susceptible to a religious movement per se, but they're also, people call them Generation Y. I call them the Y generation. They never stop asking questions. They're incredibly inquisitive. So it's not as easy to lead this generation at this stage in their lives as it was for baby boomers, who were much more susceptible to cults, for example, than millennials. They're far more connected and they're far more savvy. A lot of that has to do with how much information they have at their fingertips, literally through technology. So for them, they're going to be very inquisitive before they join something. But yes, the drive is still there to join something, to be part of something, to follow something. They're not as driven to lead as they are to feel like they're in control of their own destiny, but they want to do it in a group because it reaffirms that they're making good choices.
I guess that's not that different from people in general. I've noticed, and we all do this now, we look at our iPhones maybe every 10 minutes or maybe every 10 seconds to see if there's a message from somebody to make us feel like we're not alone in the world or something. But I've taken the iPhone, to me, is sort of a curse among millennials who I've found to be awful listeners. Just able to listen for maybe 10, 15 seconds at a time before, you know, a bright, shiny thing goes by and their attention is distracted. But at the same time, you're saying the iPhone and all these other different ways of communicating have been good, because it's provided a world of information right at virtually at their fingertips. I mean, I'm just really making more of a statement than I guess that goes for all of us. But I think a lot of these kids have grown up with the computer. I didn't grow up with a computer, and I wonder how that's changed their mindset or changed their worldview.
Sorry, I was checking my phone. Did you ask? No. Yeah, I think that this is a generation that. They're digital natives. And so growing up with that much technology, they're used to doing more than one thing at the same time. And so it's very unnatural for them to sit and watch your mouth move and try to just take in what you're saying. They like getting stimuli from multiple sources at the same time. And then they do very quick math. They filter all that and they filter out things they don't really need. I mean, the millennials I work with in the media space are constantly baffled at the idea of a 2-minute short video that explains something. They don't want to watch all that. They literally want to be able to flip through something at their own speed and filter out what they don't really care about. So they're very visual because so much around them has been hyperactive visual stimuli their entire lives. And so when you give them something that feels right for a Gen X speed, it feels way too slow for them. And they get very restless.
Or if there's a video, if it's 2 minutes, there better be a marker ahead of time that says, look at 1 minute, 33 seconds. This is the most important part, so they can skip right to that.
It's not only the marker, to your point, it's also the ability to skip to where you've identified this part's important. They don't feel like they need the warm-up and the cool-down in the workout. They just want to get to the part where they're jumping up and down really fast, and then they'll warm up and cool down on their own terms.
In your book, I read an excerpt from the book, and I'm going to read from it because I think it's funny. And it has to do with the look of the hipster or of the millennial. Now, this refers to males, and after this, I want you to talk to me about females because I don't really know the female look, but I'm going to read this few paragraphs to you. The ridiculous facial experiments that have become synonymous with hipster males are an attempt to reaffirm their masculinity, not dissimilar to gay men rocking mustaches in the 70s and 80s to affirm that they were, quote, straight. And really, with skinny jeans, the tight t-shirts, the mustache, the svelte, non-threatening build, it's all a bit Freddie Mercury. Hipster males look very gay, or they look like they're in a period drama from the Prohibition era, rolling their jeans up to the calf, buttoning the top button of their worker shirts, and sporting a high-buzzed haircut with waxed handlebar, or worse, mutton chops. Either way, a lot of hipster males are basically wearing a costume. There's nothing cool about wearing a scarf in 80-degree weather and meggings, which are male leggings, are clearly a cry for attention. Sorry, I couldn't read the meggings part without laughing. I thought that
they exist.
I've seen them. I think it's hilarious. Now, first of all, I'm going to ask you two questions. One, what is the female hipster look? And the last question is why? Why do both of them wear this? Maybe it's the same reason that hipsters did what they did and punk rockers did and all that other stuff.
Yeah, there's some of that. First of all, hipsters are a subculture within the millennial generation. And in many ways, there was a hipster subculture for every generation. The hipster name is something that clearly has been co-opted most recently for this subculture of millennials. And of course, so much of identifying a subculture has to do with their look. When you hear the term hippie or you hear the term beatnik, the first thing you think of is not, you know, anybody who, you know, not the work that came out of some of those famous hippies, but you immediately picture someone with bell-bottom jeans or the flower children in the 60s. So with hipsters, we immediately associate them with some of these outrageous early adopters or influencers within the millennial generation. And that's all they are. They're actually so desperately and aggressively trying to find some way to be authentic that they're going to end up being part of a subculture and not very individual themselves. So it's got to be counterculture. So this counterculture is a deep, deep rooted need to find authenticity as a generation. And they do that by reaching back to anything they feel is authentic. So with millennial males, let's look at this crazy sort of facial hair, the facial hair and that 1920s kind of look. That's something that feels very authentic to them. And of course, you know, growing out a mustache, and we're in the middle of Movember, so some of that is actually very in a reverent sort of nod to men's health, and I think that's great. But when you find these guys that are 28 years old in Brooklyn and they're dressing like literally something out of the Prohibition era, it's really just to say that they don't really care to connect with baby boomer executives. They want to do something their way and be different, but yet they want to fit into a group. So you walk around Bushwick, and there's so many of these guys all wearing the same thing.
So they're not doing it because they think it's attractive. They're doing it, or they do, they don't realize, but they're doing it to separate themselves. They're like getting the shaved head in the military, which separates you and puts you in a different group, so you don't really associate with the rest of society.
I think so much of it is, you know, they can't figure out what's going on.
I mean, what you're describing, you know, like I said, every generation has it. But it's the premise of cults as well. And you, if right. you join a cult, you don a uniform and a look, a haircut. The Hare Krishna shaved their head except but for the ponytail, because it's you're differentiated and you are ostracized because of that. But in a way, they want that as well.
So what's going on, and I've actually talked to psychologists about this, and we referenced this in the book a little bit, and that is that... You know, it's not surprising that youth culture, when they hit their 20s and they start trying to figure themselves out, they need to belong to something. We talked a little bit about that. And so they feel very out of place. They're self-conscious about the fact that they're not quite fitting in, or they haven't found their purpose. And so if they can do it with a fashion statement by going to a vintage store and buying, you know, a certain look of clothes, and by the way, that's very much driven by their budget as much as their fashion sense, or they can grow out their mustache. It's really about controlling something and making a choice. And what's happened is that other millennials who are in that same state of mind look at the way one person handled it by growing out their mustache and getting a certain type of haircut and kind of giving this 1920s look. And they think, I could do that too.
Right.
That's something I could pull off. And so you end up seeing what is referred to as a fashion trend with millennial females.
One second. I just want to make sure people listening know who I'm talking to. This is Matt Heller I'm speaking to. I'm Joe Shaneman, and this is the Joe Downtown Show on 91.5 FM.
For millennial females, it's a little bit different. I mean, we're dealing with a generation where, in many ways, millennial females are so different from females of earlier generations. They grew up, in my opinion, being the first generation of females in the United States, anyway, to grow up being told they were absolutely 100% as good, if not better, than the boys in their class, and that they were told not to be cheerleaders, so many of them, but to instead, you know, be an athlete, and it's not about the boys, it's all about them. And that sort of girl power that they grew up with gets to be very uncomfortable when they reach an age where there's something driving them to mate and breed. And so for many of them, it's a very confusing time. And that angst that they start to feel is manifesting itself in fashion. Mm. So when you get, and really all you have to do is watch the show Girls that Lena Dunham created for HBO. Best example out there, if you really want to understand the mindset of the millennial female.
Can you give me a 30 second look of a millennial female?
It's all about making sure that anyone who sees them understands they don't really care, right? So again, driven by some sort of angst, they want to make sure that you don't think they're trying to fit in. Ironically, they absolutely are, but they're going to choose a look that might not be the best fit for their body type. A haircut that most people would say that's kind of an ugly haircut. Again, it's very costumey.
So we're not talking about Esprit, Benetton. You might as well those companies might as well just give it up. Unless they tear holes in all their clothes.
No, I think they already gave up.
Okay. Well, this has been a fascinating conversation with Matt Heller. He's coming out with a book called Millennials 101 very shortly, I hope. This is the Joe Downtown Show on KUNV 91.5 FM. With producer Steve Zeller, I'm Joe Shaneman. Thanks for listening.